In Canada, you see his work everywhere. An original by Norvell Morrison. Priceless. But
it became clear that there were more and more fakes.
A story that impacts Indigenous artists around the world.
How has nobody ever looked into this?
Forgeries, fakes, and fortunes to be made. An art fraud of epic proportions.
I either have to let this go or try to find out what the truth is.
Binge the full series now on the ABC Listen app or weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
How do you assassinate someone if you live in a country with strict gun laws? Well, from what I've learned on this show so far, you could use a blade, like a knife or a sword perhaps. Or you could try poison. But I bet none of you thought, maybe I'll just make my own gun. Well, that's exactly what the assassin at the center of today's episode did. All to take down one of Japan's most powerful men. It's a bright morning in Japan, July 8th, 2022. The COVID-19 pandemic is still in full swing, and everyone is masked up. We're on a street in Nara, western Japan, a district known for natural beauty and friendly deer. One man scopes the scene nervously. He's wiry with disheveled hair, totally unremarkable in the crowd. Tetsuya Yamagami has been on edge for days, not speaking to anyone unless absolutely necessary. He's ignored friendly greetings from his neighbors and met respectful bows with silence. He's got too much on his mind to bother with small talk. Right now, he's standing at an intersection. The elections are in 2 days, and a campaign speech is due to begin any minute now. Tetsuya has been out of work for the past couple of years, ever since he quit his old job as a factory forklift operator. It's a smallish group that's gathered on the street, but they're starting to get restless, waiting for the speeches to begin. Tetsuya's here for one speaker in particular, a former prime minister supporting the campaign. But Shinzo Abe isn't your run-of-the-mill former prime minister. He's Japan's longest-serving post-war leader, one of the most recognizable faces in the country. A dozen police officers are milling around, but they're not particularly worried, and no one is paying attention to this skinny, jittery 41-year-old. Story of his life, really. Shinzo Abe takes the mic and begins to speak. In his late 60s, Abe has a thick head of healthy hair. He's wearing a blue business suit and a white business shirt, tieless and open at the collar. Tetsuya steps forward. A shot rings out. Abe pauses, then turns to find the source of the sound. It's the last thing he'll ever do. Hello, my friend. I'm Aslan Bahari, and this is Assassins, the show where we unravel history's most shocking assassinations. Today, a cult-related killing and the shadowy powers that provoked it. Japan's longest-serving prime minister wasn't killed by a political rival. He was murdered by a man with a more personal grievance. And in a country with barely any gun violence and some of the toughest gun laws on earth, Abe's assassination is a shock. While Japan is no stranger to political assassinations, it's still one of the safest countries in the world. So what did Shinzo Abe do to attract Tetsuya Yamagami's rage? How did Yamagami make a gun? And perhaps more importantly, why did the Japanese public switch from outrage at the assassin to outrage for the assassin? Tetsuya Yamagami was a victim of childhood trauma, a succession of personal tragedies punctuated by poverty. It's 1984. He's 4 years old. His father jumps off a building, killing himself. There's no clear explanation for why his father took his own life, and it shatters the family. Up until this point, They'd been relatively affluent, running their own construction business in Western Japan. But now, they have to go and live with Tetsuya's grandfather. At around the same time, Tetsuya's older brother develops lymphoma, leaving him blind in one eye. The double tragedy puts an unbearable strain on the young family, and their mother struggles to cope. She joins the South Korea-based Family Federation of World Peace and Unification. It's more commonly known as the Unification Church, or the Moonies. It's a messianic sect that mainstream Christians don't consider to be Christianity, though the group does believe in Jesus as the Son of God. The church claims to have 3 million followers worldwide, but other estimates put the number much lower. It was formed by a man called Sun Myung Moon, which is where the Moonies nickname comes from. You might have seen videos of mass Moonie weddings, where hundreds of couples gathered in stadiums to tie the knot, but we'll have to get back to that later. While Tetsuya's mother becomes more and more entrenched in this cultish religion, her three children are neglected. Tetsuya's relatives and neighbors later tell Japanese media that the brothers would frequently call asking for food because they hadn't eaten in days, and their mother hadn't been home in weeks. An uncle helps them cover costs for a few years, sending money and canned food when they fall short. But it's not just time and attention that the Unification Church demands from Tetsuya's mother, it wants her money too. And so she starts donating everything they have to the church. Even while their uncle contributes his own money to take care of his niece and nephews, their mother starts pressuring him to donate to the church as well. It gets so bad that one time, he throws a cup of tea at her in anger. Tetsuya's grandfather gets fed up, blaming her for their poverty. The family is destitute. In 1994, a third tragedy strikes. Tetsuya's grandfather passes away, and he loses the only stable parental figure left in his life. Tetsuya's mother inherits land and money. Finally, they can live comfortably. But no, once again, she donates it all to the church. Tetsuya is a bright student. He goes to an elite high school with a promising take-up rate for higher education. On paper, his future prospects look good. He completes his exams and goes to enroll for college when he discovers that his mother has donated all the money set aside for his education to, you guessed it, the church. It's the same story over and over again. Whenever there's an opportunity for the family to pick up the pieces, Tetsuya's mother gives the money to the church, and suddenly, they're broke again. Tetsuya's dreams are crushed. He despairs at his wasted potential. His brother is even worse off, still struggling with lymphoma. Despite this, their mother can't stop giving their money away, until it's all gone. It's 2002 when she files for bankruptcy. Tetsuya is 20 years old. He joins the Japanese Navy, but this career doesn't last. He's discharged after just 3 years for trying to take his own life. He'd later claimed that he wanted his siblings to get his life insurance money and use it to finally escape poverty. Perhaps her son's suffering served as a wake-up call. But around this time, Tetsuya's mother manages to stay away from the church for about 8 years. But then, in 2015, yet another blow for the family. Tetsuya's older brother takes his own life. His lymphoma required long-term care, and he just didn't have the money to continue treatment. At his funeral, Tetsuya breaks down. He asks a relative, "Why did my brother have to die?" After all this heartbreak, what do you imagine Tetsuya's mother does next? Well, 2 years later, she rejoins the Unification Church. Over about 20 years, she's donated the equivalent of $1.4 million to the Moonies. The life insurance payout from her husband's death, the inheritance from her father, Tetsuya's college fund, his brother's medical care, all of it sacrificed at the altar of Sun Myung Moon. Moon was born in 1920 into a traditional Presbyterian family. But around the time of his 15th birthday, he had a divine calling to establish his own kingdom of God on earth. The old I've been chosen by God situation. During the heightened politics of the Cold War, Moon was passionately anti-communist and particularly anti-China, which made his church a useful tool for the US-aligned government in South Korea. Meanwhile, in Japan, the Unification Church became deeply embedded with the Conservative Party, the same party Abe was a part of, the Japanese Liberal Democratic Party. So how did Sun Myung Moon's influential church convince people like Tetsuya's mother to give away their life savings? From very early on, Moon saw himself as the new Messiah, promising to purge human bloodlines of the evil within them. Moon believed that Jesus was crucified before he was able to fulfill his mission on earth, and that Moon himself had been called upon to finish the task. It sounds dramatic, and it is. Moon's heresy saw him excommunicated by the Presbyterians. There are other things that made them stand out from mainstream Christianity. The Unification Church emphasizes duality and binaries, like good and evil, masculine and feminine. They claim the biblical fall of man occurred when Eve was seduced by the devil, procreating with him and embedding evil in the human bloodline. A major theme of the church is that human history is coming to its conclusion, that God had sent the Messiah in the form of Reverend Moon, and that a war to end all wars will happen soon. But to be fair, everyone's kind of saying that these days. According to the church, they're fighting to rid the world of evil and usher in a new, sinless human race. And how do they plan to do this? Hold up. This is where it gets weird. Oh, weirder. Mass wedding ceremonies. Moon or a church authority would match up thousands of men and women, creating unions they believe will lead to a pure bloodline, free of evil. They then marry their matches en masse in large public spaces. A noble cause, ridding humanity of evil, right? But unlike his mother, Tetsuya wasn't fooled. He called the church a predatory South Korean religious cult. Which brings us back to that day in Japan's Nara City. Tetsuya positions himself behind Shinzo Abe, who's getting ready to make his speech. In Tetsuya's hand is a gun that he's made himself. Now, it's not much to look at. He's duct taped what seems to be two sawn off water pipes together to make a double barrel. The pipes are taped to a wooden board above a hand grip. There's a small battery under the contraption to set off the gunpowder in the bullets. The weapon is the very definition of DIY. Tetsuya moves to within 10 meters of Abe, more than close enough. With everyone's eyes trained on the speaker, Tetsuya takes aim. A shot rings out. An unusually large puff of white smoke hangs in the air between the assassin and his target. Abe pauses his speech for a second and looks over his shoulder towards the noise. It sounded like a car backfiring, or a firework maybe. It's too loud to be a gun. Abe's security team don't seem panicked. A second passes. Tetsuya takes a step forward, more careful with his aim this time. Another shot cracks the air. Abe's collar is shredded. Red splatters appear on his white shirt. He collapses to his hands and knees, clutching his neck. Tatsuya drops his homemade gun and accepts his fate. Men in suits tackle him to the ground. Weirdly, Shinzo Abe wasn't even at the top of Tetsuya Yamagami's hit list. And why would he be? His connection to the church isn't immediately obvious. Tetsuya had wanted to take out the head of the Unification Church, Moon's wife, a prominent and reclusive woman, Dr. Hanakja Moon. But she's too well protected, her whereabouts too difficult to track. How is it easier to take out a former Prime Minister of Japan than the head of the Moonies? Anyway, Shinzo Abe wasn't a member of the church, but his grandfather, also a former Prime Minister, was crucial in helping establish the Unification Church in Japan. And Tatsuya had seen a congratulatory video message Abe had sent the church, and this wasn't the first time he'd appeared in church publicity. So yes, Abe did have some loose connection to the Moonies, but what happens after he dies is completely unexpected. In fact, if you judge the success of an assassination by its impact, Tetsuya Yamagami is probably one of the most successful assassins in history. Instead of baying for the assassin's blood or agitating for the severest of punishments, the Japanese public seemed to concede that Tetsuya has a point. Investigations into the murder soon opened the door to scrutiny of the Unification Church, practices that have long been protested by its victims, but hushed up by hesitant media and self-serving politicians. And before long, all the church's dirty laundry starts coming out. The church's dubious links with Liberal Democratic Party members becomes public. A party survey found half of its members had ties to the Unification Church. Its links with South Korea's Central Intelligence Agency as an anti-communist, anti-Chinese front become a talking point. And public anger was so intense that there were even protests against plans to give Abe a state funeral. One man actually set himself on fire outside Japanese Parliament to stop it. In the end, the church is forced to acknowledge it had accepted, quote, excessive donations from Tetsuya's mother, although it argued that it gave back half the money after the uncle asked for its return. But it was all too little, too late. In March 2025, a Tokyo court heard that the church, quote, sowed fear amongst followers and harmed their families, and it agreed to banish them from Japan. Back in the church's Korean HQ, the ripples of Tetsuya's actions make waves. Dr. Hanakja, who you'll remember is Moon's wife and also the head of the Unification Church, has been indicted over allegations of bribing South Korea's First Lady. The church's shadowy network of influence stands exposed. Today, Tetsuya Yamagami is alone again, languishing in prison. His mother writes and visits his detention center often, asking to see him, but he refuses her. To this day, she remains a member of the Unification Church. Assassins is hosted by me, Aslan Pahari. Hanno Jose is the producer. Sound by John Jacobs. Kyla Slaven is the supervising producer. Executive producers are Joel Werner, Eric George, and Jessica Radburn. As well as listening to Assassins, you can watch full episodes of the show on YouTube and Spotify. Those videos are shot and edited by Tejas Bhatt. If there's an assassination you think we should cover on the show, please email us. assassins@abc.net.au I hope to hear from you soon, my friend.